Studios this afternoon, I'm delighted to say, is Raymond Hebert. He is the president and CEO of the Community Foundation of Acadiana. They have been in our community since 2000, the year 2000. And last year, you all started an event that I know you were thrilled about last year, and then you have organized the second annual Leaders in Philanthropy Awards Luncheon, and you're here to talk about that luncheon and the keynote speaker for that luncheon this year. But I'd like to begin by talking about the Community Foundation of Acadiana. Our listeners, I know, have heard us announce certain funds over the years, funds that you all put together to help out particular disasters or special situations in our community. And they've heard us mention the name over the years, but perhaps don't know the full breadth of what you all do. So maybe you can tell us just about how the Community Foundation got started and what your initial mission was.
Sure. Thank you, Judith, and thanks for having me. Community Foundation of Acadiana, as you say, has been in existence since 2000, and essentially we are a donor service company. We're a nonprofit corporation, so from a tax perspective, no different from any other. However, from a mission perspective, we're quite different. We attract charitable and philanthropic dollars from a variety of sources, individuals, families, corporations, even other nonprofits or foundations that come to us with their resources and establish charitable funds that they name and essentially they direct. These funds can be scholarship funds or funds that designate particular organizations or entities, field of interest funds, or our most popular option is a donor advised fund. And in fact, a couple of years ago, we had one of our donor advised funds that underwrote one of the KRVS programs.
Absolutely.
So that was something we're very proud of.
Absolutely. Well, now the Community Foundation mission, you find it around the country. You're not the only organization that has this idea in communities. What is it about a community foundation that is really valuable to a community? Because we know of family foundations, particularly on public radio, we hear all the time, you know, this program made possible in part by the MacArthur Foundation. So obviously there are private foundations out there. What does the Community Foundation do in particular in a community that helps charitable giving?
Well, it's a great question, and I don't think there's any black and white answer to that question. We're one of over 700 community foundations across the country. In fact, the field will celebrate its centennial in 2014, I'm pleased to say. Our foundation was founded in 2000, several years after, obviously. We're very pleased. I'll give a plug for our foundation. Earlier this year, we were recognized among the top 100 community foundations in the country as the number three most active grant maker, which is exciting. We also were recognized as the greatest number of gifts per capita, which illustrates, I think, the generosity in our community and in Acadiana in general. But to answer your question, every community foundation may operate a little differently, and some of them have been established for different reasons. Some because of the sale of a company or someone left a bequest, a sizable bequest that the community now has and holds, and it is endowed and typically endowed to the benefit of the community. But in other cases, like ours, we were started with nothing and grew the foundation by having several folks come to the table. There's no one particular objective of a community foundation. Now, some, for instance, the Community Foundation of the National Capital Area in Washington, D.C., interestingly, a transient community, they focus heavily on the arts and music. Other community foundations might focus on other things. What we're trying to do is be as donor-centric, accommodate the objectives and interests of our donors in particular. But in the course of doing that, we have had some interesting opportunities, if you will. The hurricanes of 2005 presented incredible opportunities for us. We received over $11 million in charitable commitments, got to meet some interesting folks, including former President George Bush the Elder and George Clooney. Fast forward to, unfortunately, the oil spill in 2010. We were the organization that facilitated the $30 million BP Louisiana Tourism Recovery Fund. So we're grateful to BP and to Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden for entrusting us with those assets.
Well, it sounds, I guess my question too was just, you obviously and the community foundations around the country are filling a great need. Just the list that you've given right there of ways that you all fit into the community and ways other foundations fit into other communities. It sounds like there are a lot of people who have wanted to give. But before community foundations, it was more difficult in certain communities for small families or individuals to create that opportunity. And it sounds like you all are really facilitating that.
Absolutely. And we're not exclusive to Lafayette. Mm-hmm. We cover our geography is essentially unlimited. Our primary focus area, however, includes 8 parishes, and we are heavily involved in those 8 parishes. We actually have 2 affiliates in St. Mary Parish and in Iberia Parish, local boards operating under our auspices, generating dollars and putting charitable and philanthropic dollars back into their community. We become essentially a very attractive alternative to private or family foundations. In order to have a private or family foundation, it takes a sizable amount of resources and commitment, and frankly, not everybody has that capacity. What we offer is a very clear and attractive alternative to that, but it also opens the door to other opportunities for other folks that may not have the capacity to have a private foundation. The rules are different, to be true, but by establishing a fund with the community foundation, an individual, a family can create a giving mechanism that mirrors that of a private foundation without, I would argue, without the IRS rules and headache and without the expense associated with it.
Or the complexity of administration.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it gives, I would argue, a greater opportunity for a greater number of people to participate. And I want to be clear about this. One of the misconceptions is I have to give to a charity, church, a school that I want to support or give to the community foundation. It's not that at all. In fact, we never want to be an obstacle to giving to the causes, the institutions that you care about. What we want to do is help facilitate that. And in several cases, we've actually been able to enhance that giving to the benefit of all.
So you don't claim exclusivity like an art gallery says you can only sell through us.
Absolutely not.
Right? You're
Absolutely
just there
not.
To help out. Well, it sounds like you really touched an amazing chord in this community. People who wanted to be very generous but didn't quite have the means, didn't have the direction or the administration to be able to give as they wanted, and perhaps hadn't even considered giving in the way until you all were created here in the community.
Yeah, there are some very, very generous folks that have been very generous for years, families, individuals, and they continue to do mm-hmm. so. They just continue to do so through a different venue, if you will. Mm-hmm. And our platform, I think, has made it incredibly flexible. It's easy, and it's actually fun. It's actually fun. So we present a platform that enhances one's philanthropy.
Right. And so in addition to offering the opportunity to families, to groups, to individuals, you all also come up with funds, as you mentioned, for disasters like the hurricanes, the oil spill. But other projects as well have been funneled through you all. I think you all had something to do with the horse farm. You have facilitated certain aspects of that. I think also some parks, perhaps a state park, and just offering these opportunities, or others have come to you with this idea and you have helped to facilitate it.
Absolutely. We're very involved with the horse farm currently. And what our position is we want to create an unparalleled public space for current and future generations. We're committed to that. And our role is simply that we can bring an objective perspective to the table, and we think the objective resources to the table to make this happen. But prior to that, we were very involved. Scott Angel was very involved with us in the Palmetto Island State Park Fund over in Vermilion Parish, a fine state park that unfortunately wasn't opened because of budget cuts at the state level and also because of a couple of tragedies because of hurricane. Well, we were able to attract private dollars to get that park open for a few years, which is a real terrific thing to do. It's private dollars that are helping to fund a public park and to the enjoyment of a lot of folks. And I understand it's got a terrific waiting list for folks that want to go and camp out there. In addition to that, and because of that, we actually created something else called Louisiana Parks Foundation, which is to benefit all state parks throughout the state. So we're working with the Office of State Parks and the Office of the Lieutenant Governor on those issues as well. So just continues to grow our capacity and our interest in the people that have an interest in working with and through the Community Foundation.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always delighted when I get press releases from you all, seeing what new opportunities you're creating for people mm-hmm. to help make our community a better place. If you have just tuned in, my guest is Raymond Hebert. He is the president and CEO of the Community Foundation of Acadiana, talking about the Community Foundation as well as their second annual Leaders in Philanthropy Awards Luncheon, which will be taking place in November, actually November 1st. And when you talked about, so many people giving so much in this community, Acadiana. In fact, you mentioned a couple statistics that were pretty amazing about how much people give in this community and how generous they are. And you wanted a way, I assume, to honor these people in all the parishes that you all cover. And so you came up with this awards luncheon. It was hugely successful last year. Maybe you can tell us a bit about the one last year.
Sure. Well, last year was our inaugural Leaders in Philanthropy Luncheon. What we decided to do was get a guest speaker. We had a fabulous guest speaker, and we wanted to recognize eight individuals or couples from each of our eight primary service area parishes. And it was a huge success. I'm going to tell you, we recognized folks from throughout Acadiana, and there's no shortage of them, just for the record. These are good people, and it's not about money. It's not about how much somebody gives. It's about what they do to enhance their communities. And we have some really dynamic folks throughout Acadiana. So the luncheon was a terrific success. This year we expect over 700 attendees as we replicate that. Our speaker this year is Todd Graves, the founder and CEO of Raising Cane's, who's a dynamic young businessman from the Baton Rouge area who has one of the fastest growing fast food chains in the country. And he's our guest speaker this year, so we're real interested to hear him. A lot of folks are interested to hear his story.
Right, and he's quite generous himself.
Absolutely.
Philanthropy is very much a part of his life.
Absolutely, which is very attractive and admirable. It's not just about business and business success, but it's about his investment in the communities in which he serves. So obviously we are interested in hearing it, but our phone is ringing off the hook for tickets, so folks mm-hmm. are anxious to enjoy this event. It's a very what I like to consider a very light event. It's not stuffy. It's exciting, and it is the one word I would use to describe it is inspiring. Hmm. It inspires people. The guest speaker is inspiring. The leaders in philanthropy throughout Acadiana are inspiring. And so it's a win-win for all of us. So
right.
We're looking forward to that.
What a happy occasion to be honoring people who better their communities.
Correct.
And as you said, it's not just about dollars, but with how they improve their communities and their spirit with which they do that. How do you choose these people in the different parishes?
Well, I always like to say that I don't. Mm-hmm. We have all the stakeholders of the Community Foundation, fund owners, donors, friends, volunteers, board members, et cetera, all have an opportunity to nominate. And some of those nominates nations, there are several folks that I frankly even haven't even heard of, but their stories are so compelling and it's hard sometimes to make a decision. So what we do is we have a very objective and fair process where all of those nominations are considered. In some cases, we have to ask the nominator for more information. But at the end of the day, we have a volunteer committee that culls through them all, and they make recommendations, and those recommendations float up to our leadership, which gives its approval, and we go on from there.
All right. Do you remember some of the winners from last year?
Yes, I can. A few of the winners from last year, Ted and Judy Carmichael from Acadia Parish, Gene Sellers from Vermilion Parish, Dr. Kenneth Fournette from St. Martin Parish, Jim Prince from Lafayette. Let me think.
And were there some projects that particularly struck you as really wonderful examples of why you choose people like that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my favorite stories, Tim Fontenot is a physical therapist in Ville Platte. He created a couple of years ago to sort of ease some of the tensions in Ville Platte. He created what he calls the T Cotton Bowl. It's a high school football game between the predominantly black public school and the predominantly white Catholic school. They have a football game every year. There's a dinner for the members and the team players and the families the night before. And it's a fabulous way that brings the community together in a very, very unique way. And it's not about money in this case. Mm-hmm, it's just mm-hmm. about bringing the community together. And so that is one of my favorite stories of some of the things that are going on in our area.
Absolutely. I can see why you say your job is fun.
Sure, it is.
What great ideas. And I think people are beginning to realize just what a generous community we live in. I mean, we know that families are close and communities are close, but there's just a lot of generosity, a lot of very creative
sure.
generosity in the community.
Sure.
So, and you get to see it all.
I do.
At the Community Foundation. Again, Raymond Hebert, President and CEO of the Community Foundation of Acadiana. He's talking about their second annual Leaders in Philanthropy Awards luncheon. Now, the winners for this year will be announced only at the luncheon.
They will be announced prior to. Okay. In fact, we're hoping maybe by the end of this week to make that announcement. So we're real excited about that.
And can people find those names on your website or Facebook page?
They will. Mm-hmm. They will soon, probably in the next few days. Mm-hmm. It'll be on our website. And Facebook.
And I just went to your Facebook page, a very nice page. It's a good page to like, and you get to hear about what activities are going on and new funds are happening at the Community Foundation of Acadiana.
Sure.
So it's really a good page to like there. And at your website, what kinds of information can people find about if they're interested in maybe starting, or it may be the best thing would be to call?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The website is a good first stop, mm-hmm. but we always encourage folks to pick up the phone and give us a call. We love to have confidential meetings just to discuss and answer questions. Mm-hmm. You know, folks have different ideas, and a lot of times folks kind of know what they want, but they're not sure. And so this is a great way to get their feet wet, get started with something, and, you know, who knows where that can go. It could be right now that you create a non-endowed, non-permanent checking account, essentially, a charitable checking account. But that could turn into memorializing your parents or your grandparents by setting up a permanent scholarship in their name to honor them, to benefit a school they went to or a school you went to benefit a church, to benefit another nonprofit organization. So we'd like to have those conversations. It's an evolving process
no
in many cases.
For it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we do want people to know that Community Foundation affords a very easy, flexible entry into philanthropy, and you don't have to know all the answers today to get started. So it's a great way to get started, get your feet wet, and if you choose to do so, end up creating something that's more substantial down the road.
Well, and you've described a lovely array of very small projects, huge projects, all very creative. And so really there's no limit, just your creativity and desire to give.
That's right. That's right.
Lots of people at the Community Foundation who can help you shape those.
That's right. We like to be very entrepreneurial and very creative in our approach. And so there's no shortage of that in Acadiana.
Mm. And if you are thinking about it, perhaps this awards luncheon would be a good place to go, network, meet some of the people there, and just get to hear some of the stories of what other people have done with the foundation.
Absolutely. Mm. And just hear a snippet of the Community Foundation, learn a little bit more about the organization. Mm-hmm. It's your Community Foundation. Mm. We work hard every day, but it's your Community Foundation.
Well, and I think people realize the projects that you all are involved with affect them directly with the parks and the...
That's right.
So many services. How do people get tickets if they're interested?
If they're interested, they can go to our website, cfacadiana.org, or they can call us at 337-769-4844.
And that luncheon will be on November 1st at the Cajun Dome Convention Center.
That's right.
All right. What time does it start?
11:30 until 1.
Okay. Well, check their website out, also their Facebook. And if you are interested in finding out more about possibilities, you can give them a call at the Community Foundation of Acadiana. My guest, Raymond Hebert, is the president and CEO. The Community Foundation has been in our community, Acadiana, since the year 2000. Thanks so much, Raymond.
Thank you for having me.
And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Garth Alper. He is head of the School of Music and Performing Arts, coming over a very busy schedule. I know that there are performances happening all the time these days in the School of Music. And, of course, I know the theater department's getting ready for a big show as well. But you are here to talk about the annual Gloria Fierro Lecture, which is not going to be a traditional lecture this year.
That's right.
And you're involved in it because the lecturer presenter is actually the UL Lafayette Faculty Jazz Combo. And you're a member of that combo. How did that come about, Garth, that they chose a combo for this lecture series?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think it was Lisa Grayley who contacted us and asked if we wanted to do it. So they made some sort of decision. Shows maybe not the best of judgment on their part, but that's a joke.
For those of us who have heard the jazz combo.
So she asked if we could do it, and we agreed to it. So it's tomorrow at 11 in the morning, and we're going to be performing. But since it is a lecture, we plan to also do a little talking and try to discuss what we do as jazz musicians, some of the things that go on stage that people may not be aware of. I'd like to talk, all the different people in the group will be talking about different aspects of performing jazz, but I'm hoping that myself or someone will have a chance to talk about maybe some of the nonverbal communication that goes on, looking at each other when solos are done and how to know when a soloist is done and who's going to solo next, and a lot of the things that people might see what's going on but might not know why we're doing it.
Right, and really, really useful for those of us who are perhaps out of school, not taking classes, and we don't really get to hear that side of it, the more academic, the more humanities side, because music is a part of the humanities.
Yes.
And the Friends of the Humanities at UL Lafayette sponsors this annual lecture series. Gloria Fierro, I believe, started the humanities program here at the university.
Yes, and you bring up a good point that since it is a humanities lecture, it's a little bit challenging for us as musicians in that when we talk among ourselves in a rehearsal, we tend to talk in very technical terms, chord progressions or the form of a song. And that to me, we're not going to talk so much about that. We might try to do that, but try to do that in general terms where a layperson will understand it. And we've been discussing that about topics that would be interesting to the general public, but non-musicians. And there's a whole area of interest in the humanities about music, just like someone in the humanities might be interested about a lot of different art forms. We have to tie it into that as opposed to completely technical aspects about music.
Musical shorthand amongst yourselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I did take a class with Gloria Fierro my very first semester here at UL, and it was an eye-opening, fascinating class, the way she put all kinds of arts and literature and history all together.
Yeah.
You didn't study it separately. You studied it together, and you saw the effects of each art form and what was happening in society, how it all affected each other, and it was a great way to study.
I find that wonderful. I find that so interesting, and I try to do some of that in my own classes. Right now, we're in my film scoring class, we're talking about pointillism a little bit, and pointillism in music, which was a 20th century movement, but it really came from pointillism in art, about putting all the little dots on the on the canvas, and when you step back, it created a certain feeling, or you saw the image. And in music, some of the serial composers, the 12-tone composers, almost tried copying that, where it was almost like little dashes of color, dots of color, but on the sound canvas instead of on the... So I find that stuff very interesting, and I try to make some of those connections. And I don't know how much we'll be talking about that, but...
Well, I mean, just the fact that you'll be talking about what you do and putting it in some kind of context. I mean, the title of the lecture is Highlighting Improvisational Jazz, and that is a subject that for many of us is opaque.
Right.
And any kind of transparency and knowledge you can give those of us in the audience will be so welcome.
Yes, and we will be talking about that, about, you know, a jazz person sees a piece of music, and it's really just a framework. it's just a very basic framework. When I've had people, if I'm playing piano and I have a jazz chart in front of me, they'll invariably look at it and then see what I'm playing and they go, all those notes aren't up there on that page. And I said, well, that's the point, you know, that we just use a basic, like I said, a basic framework, and we really embellish that to a great extent. I don't want to give away all my, you know, good lines from tomorrow. I sort of look at it, if you see a house going up and you see a frame of a house, that's sort of what the chart is like, what the piece of music looks like. And if different builders were to complete that, it might look quite different. The frame is still the same underneath it. Mm-hmm. And as improvisers, we all have that same frame for the same song, but how we embellish
it. Different colors on
exactly.
it, different decorations.
Different colors, mm-hmm. different wood, different different windows, and even the shape can change somewhat, even though overall the shape's going to stay the same, mm-hmm. but there's so many different things you can do. Mm. And that's how I see each time you go through that one form, even the same person can play it much differently, and then different people can approach it quite right. differently.
Those who are just tuning in, my guest is Garth Alper. He is head of the School of Music and Performing Arts. He will be, along with the Faculty Jazz Combo, giving the annual Gloria Fierro Lecture presentation. It's sponsored by the Friends of the Humanities here at UL Lafayette, and Gloria Fierro years ago started the Humanities program here on the UL campus. The Jazz Combo is made up of faculty members in the School of Music. You all do this in addition to your incredibly busy lives as teachers, composers. Many of you record with other people. You have students, individual students, group classes. I think y'all are the hardest working faculty on campus. But you all also work together as a combo, and you find time to play together.
Yeah.
Tell us some of the other members in this combo.
Sure. It's Bob Lucky is plays sax. Paul Morton is the trumpet player, and both them teach, have their studios where they teach jazz and jazz sax and jazz trumpet. On drums is Troy Bro, who's our percussion instructor, and Troy is not only just a wonderful jazz drummer, he's a very accomplished classical drummer. He also teaches steel drum and pretty much you name it. He's knowledgeable of world percussion instruments. And Bob Nash is an adjunct professor. He lives in Baton Rouge, and he plays bass. He plays both electric and upright, and he's a marvelous musician. And let's see, and Jeff George is our guitar teacher. He teaches both jazz and classical. And he's, everyone in the group is just, it's very fun to play with. And normally when we do a concert like this, everyone brings in a song or two. And we try to plan it so the program is interesting for everyone, and try to create variation, variety from song to song, but also try to let everyone have some input on what we do. And
so tomorrow, how are you all going to structure that with all of those members? Are you going to choose a particular song and talk about that one? How are you going to set it up?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to start with two blues numbers. And normally you wouldn't do that in a concert, you know, for sake of variety, but we're going to do them very differently. And one reason we're going to do that is to try to highlight what a blues sounds like, and then highlight all the things that you can do to a song, one type of song, to make it different. And we don't even know exactly. There's going to be improvisation going
<right. laughs>
as far as what we're going to say too. We're going to roughly plan it out, but we're not going by a script. Yeah. I can tell you that.
And well, the Friends of the Humanities must have known that when they, you know,
I hope so.
Chose you all.
I hope so. Yeah. So we're going to do the two blues, and then we're going to do a couple of my originals, and we're going to also do a song by Horace Silver, a song by Jeff Lorber, and maybe a song by Pat Metheny. So it's going to be a wide variety of jazz. It's like I said, it's we're just like we play, we're only planning it out so much.
Well, it sounds like it will be a delight and a surprise to attend this lecture. We are talking about the annual Gloria Fierro Lecture Series. This year, the UL Faculty Jazz Combo will be giving the lecture presentation. Sounds like there's a lot of great presentation that will be involved with it. It's on the UL campus in Angele Hall. Obviously, you hope that a lot of people on campus, students and faculty, will attend, but the community can also attend.
Yeah.
There's, in fact, a parking lot just catty-corner to Angele Hall. So you could head over there. It's going to start at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Great pre-luncheon activity to go to. Bring a group of friends and hear this great combo and find out more about jazz. Mm-hmm. I know that the Friends of the Humanities have been really very conscious of trying to get different presentations, lectures. Every year it seems like it's showcasing something different on campus. I think last year it was maybe anthropology and folklore. And so they really do try to showcase the talents and the research that's going on around campus. So what are you teaching this year, Garth? I know you're head of the department, but you mentioned the film score.
Yeah, I teach. Once I took over as director, I cut back on my teaching a bit. Mm-hmm. So I still teach jazz piano in private lessons mostly. We also, all the students meet in a class as well. And then I teach the film scoring class. Mm-hmm. It's a two-semester sequence from the fall to the spring. And
Keeps you busy.
It keeps me busy, and I'm also consider myself real fortunate to be able to do what I do. I think I have a great job, and mm-hmm. it's enriching for me, and I'm always learning.
And I'm always impressed by the enthusiasm of your students. Many of them will come over and play for some special occasion that's happening, or just recently in the springtime, you all had the guitar competition, but it was jazz guitar this year.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so they're trying to alternate between classical and jazz guitar, mm-hmm. and I thought that was very interesting, kind of showed that jazz is very much alive in the School of Music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's an important part of it.
It's not just the faculty playing.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, all those people that I mentioned that are in the group, every one of them teach jazz lessons. And we have three student jazz combos. Actually, a fourth is a jazz guitar combo. And we have a jazz ensemble, jazz big band as well. So there are really five student performing groups. It's jazz students can either be enrolled in the jazz studies curriculum, but they can also be enrolled in the music media curriculum. Those in music media would take, if they choose, can take jazz lessons on an instrument. So mm-hmm. it's very much alive. And like you say, there's a lot of enthusiasm. I think that's true of the whole College of the Arts, that, you know, you have people who are, I think there's something else that's driving them more than just a career, but mm-hmm. also a passion, a love for what they do.
Right. I mean, obviously you all are trying to focus on that as well, to offer the students a path afterwards.
Of course.
But really it does seem to be the art, the music that drives these kids.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right that, of course, we work to fulfill careers for students and try to get them in a place where they can make a living at what they're mm-hmm. doing. But I think it's important that it's usually something else that's driving them to mm-hmm. to be where they're at, and
right.
something else that drove all of us and on mm-hmm. the faculty to be mm-hmm. there too.
Right. Well, and it impressed me too, the young man who came to play in the springtime, who won the jazz guitar competition, was quite young. He was a freshman mm-hmm. or a sophomore.
Yep.
He was I couldn't believe the sophistication of his playing and his interest in jazz.
And like you say, that, you know, we have younger and younger students coming in at higher and higher levels.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that is related to the increased standards that the university keeps on. As students apply for the school, they need to meet higher and higher standards on their ACTs. And that seems to carry over to the quality of students we're getting in music, too.
Mm-hmm.
We find that there's better retention in classes, and students are coming in with more and more skills. Over the last 10 years, there's been a marked, noticeable difference in the quality of students. So I'm glad you noticed that, too.
Oh, absolutely. And if any of our listeners would have the opportunity, well, first of all, to go see the lecture tomorrow, mm-hmm. But also later on in the semester, the Jazz Week. You have a jazz week in the mm-hmm. fall and in the springtime to hear some of these young jazz combos in addition to the faculty group. It's truly stunning to see what they do.
That's right. And the full calendar of all our events is at music.louisiana.edu. And there are many, many concerts over the fall and the spring semester.
Yeah, great page to bookmark.
Yeah.
You'll visit it often. So my guest, if you've just tuned in, is Garth Alper, director of the School of Music and Performing Arts. He is a part of the faculty jazz combo, and they are giving the lecture presentation for the Gloria Fierro Lecture, which will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock on the UL campus in Angel Hall in the auditorium. Parking right across the corner, catty-corner to Angel Hall. All are invited to attend. It's a free lecture.
Yes.
Free lecture presentation, so you can hear some great jazz and hear these marvelous professional musicians talk about their craft and talk about the humanity of music. Well, Garth, thank you for all the work y'all do over there.
Thank you.
We look forward to having more musicians from the School of Music over the semester come and talk about what y'all are doing.
Thanks for having me on.
Now a look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. McNeese Theater's 73rd theater season opens this evening in the Sherman Fine Arts Theater with a production of Stephen Aldi Gyrgis' play The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. Tickets are available at the theater or by calling the Department of Theater. The Friends of the Humanities at UL Lafayette will host the Gloria Fierro Lecture Series. Tomorrow it is highlighting improvisational jazz with the faculty jazz combo, which includes Garth Alper, Paul Morton, Jeff George, Bob Nash, and Bob Lucky, all professors in the School of Music. It starts at 11 o'clock. It's a free program. They will be performing and talking about their art. The Breast Center of Acadiana's Foundation will have their annual Paint the Town Pink event this evening in downtown Lafayette at Tsunami. You can purchase tickets at the door. The Eunice Players Theater continues its run of On Golden Pond, directed by Vincent Barra. The play will run beginning tonight through this weekend at 7 o'clock at the Eunice Players Theater in Eunice. For more information, their website is eunicplayers.blogspot.com. Tonight in Bro Bridge, Nouveau String Band with special guest Anne Savoy will be playing downtown Bro Bridge at Café des Amis. Great music. It's from 7 until 9. The music is free. Tomorrow evening at the Blue Moon Saloon in Lafayette, the UL Press will have a book release party for Histoire des Acadiennes et des Acadiens. It is a book by Zachary Richard, and the UL Press has just published it. Beautiful book. It is in French, and it is intended for French immersion students. Students can go tomorrow evening from 6 to 8 p.m., the special arrangement with the Blue Moon Saloon, so all are invited. At McNeese, the annual faculty exhibition will have their reception for the artists on Friday, September 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Grand Gallery. A La Prima will benefit Lafayette Ballet Theater on Friday at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. It's at 6:30. Tickets for A La Prima will be available through the Acadiana Center for the Arts website or by calling them. There will be music, a short performance by Lafayette Ballet Theater dancers, a silent auction, and food as well. Downtown Alive will present the Mercy Brothers in Parc Sanssouci on Friday. Music starts at 6 o'clock. The Spinner's Web, a storyteller's night, will take place at Cité des Arts this Friday. Jim Phillips will present it. It will feature also Barry Ansley, Sally O'Donlan, Bill Matthews, Hoagie Siebert, and Jim Phillips will be telling stories as well. And the next house, open house, will be this Saturday, September 29th from 11 to 1 p.m., 319 Jackson Street. This is a house that has been designed by UL architecture students, a very interesting house incorporating lots of public-private partnerships. If you'd like to know more about it, you can contact the School of Architecture here at UL Lafayette, or just show up at 11 o'clock on Saturday, 319 Jackson Street. Louisiana Folk Roots presents Musical Chefs this Saturday, the 29th, from 11 until 2.